Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. How does it feel to live in an insane asylum? I had to ask myself that today in light of what happened. Remember last night we talked about Senator Bernie Sanders introducing a resolution or amendment, which turned out, I guess, to be way long, 600 pages, initiate and institute single-payer health care in this country. And when he tried to introduce it, the normal procedure is to read a little bit of it, and then the person introducing the legislation will waive the right to have the whole thing read, yada, yada. But Tom Coburn, this really prickish senator, psychopath from Oklahoma, where's he from? It doesn't matter. He's from hell is where he's from. Demanded the whole thing be read. Well, after 4 hours of reading, 160, 150 pages, Sanders gave up and just said, okay, I withdraw it. That's madness part one. Madness part two, the Republicans right now, right this minute, are staging a prayer, whatever they're calling it. Is it inside the Senate? These crazy people are praying for Jesus or God or somebody to end health insurance reform in this country. Did you know that, Kathy?
Either Oral Roberts has been resurrected or Michelle Bachmann is channeling him.
They're crazy. These people are absolutely insane. Not only has corporate America taken over our system of government, but they've done so with a herd of insane people in the Congress. Every single Republican, you know my feelings about Republican office holders, a herd of insane people in the House and the Senate. And all these little monsters who just deserve to have their pants taken down and their asses spanked until they can't sit down on right-wing talk radio and television, and nobody's resisting. The President of the United States is apparently sucking his thumb and twisting his hair and trying to decide what to do. You know what's going to happen, don't you? Come the 2010 election, and you know this is going to happen. The Democrats are going to be completely removed from leadership position in the House and the Senate. And as Marcos Molitis said tonight on Overman's program, Obama may have a challenger from the Democratic side in 2012. And poor Marcos, you know, he says, oh, yeah, he'll vote again. You got to wonder why, right? As he pointed out, though, the Democrats have got to stop pretending that the Republicans are the same species that normal people are and stop trying to negotiate with them. That's neither here nor there. In terms of the political reality of the Democrats and the Republicans, I hope they all roast in hell. I really do. But, you know, Bernie Sanders came up with this amendment that would create a fully government-run health care system. Medicare for everybody. And Coburn, This thug from Oklahoma, just a class A prick from Oklahoma, forced the clerk to start reading this entire amendment, which threatened to grind the Senate to a halt for the rest of the day and probably longer. This is just like what Newt Gingrich did back in, when was it, 96, 97? So Bernie Sanders withdrew the amendment. Now, to show you what rotten sons of bitches Republicans are, I mean, they really are, these religious fanatic nutballs. At the start, as David Herzenhorn at New York Times points out, at the start of the Senate floor debate over health care legislation last month, Republicans agreed to forego a reading by the clerks of the entire 2,000-page bill submitted by Harry Reid. That deal that lawmakers head home for the Thanksgiving holiday. But today, the Republicans, you see, assume that Mr. Sanders is a socialist, which he is. But that's not the real reason. The real reason is Republicans are scum-sucking whores, no offense to sex workers, who will do whatever they're told to do by the health insurance industrial complex. And today was the another example. I'm astonished. So to further corrupt their filthy religion, these Christian freaks are now, I think they're doing it right now, holding a prayer meeting, asking Jesus to kill health insurance reform in this country. It has me so furious that I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what I should do. We've done a lot of soul searching here on the Beloit program about whether or not to have a Christmas program as we've had for the past decade. Longer, actually. We started in Chicago back in 97. Well, I guess that would be 10 years, wouldn't it? No, 12 years. And the argument that we make in favor of having the program is that these pieces of human waste are not Christians. Well, yes, they are. Of course they are. If they're not, who is? But it's getting more and more difficult for me to participate in any of this, not just the political sewer that these Republican bastards have put the country in, but also the religious sewer, the socioeconomic sewer. So I don't know. We're discussing it because on the Christmas program, some of it is, more Celtic and pagan, like reading the night before Christmas with Molly and some of the music that we play. But we also do a reading from Luke, and which everybody knows is nonsense. It never occurred that way. But so are stories from Greek mythology, nonsense, or Egyptian mythology, nonsense. And I put Christian mythology in the same category. It's nonsense, especially these, the legends. So in that light, we were always able to do it. Okay, it's nonsense, but, it's kind of a cute story, kind of moving, kind of sweet, even though none of this crap happened, but none of the crap that the Greeks and the Roman gods or the Norse gods claimed happened either. So, but now, it's gotten the point with me that to focus any kind of honor or respect on these people. And I feel the same way, by the way, about Islam. I don't care how much they talk peace. I don't know how much the Christians talk peace. Both these religions are murderous, blood-soaked, degenerate activities of hatred, both of them. What, you want me to include the Jews? The attitude of the Jews where it concerns the Palestinians is horrific. But for some reason, whatever the attitude of the Jews about their religion or their chosen status by God, that's their problem. They don't do what the Muslims and the Christians do. They just don't. So I'm leaving them out. But these two bloody religions of Islam and Christianity, I truly have just about had it. I don't know. So if you're a regular listener to this program and we haven't made a final decision yet about what we're going to do about our traditional Christmas show, but we're leaning towards just tossing it all in the toilet and flushing it.
The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on a Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. It's about 22 past the hour. The what the deal is, it started at 8:30 Eastern time, so it's just about over. Family Research Council, focused on the family, and some of these other sick organizations are hosting a one-hour webcast to get Christians and churches to join in corporate prayer. Corporate prayer. I wonder if they get the secondary meaning there. Probably not. This is from their websites, these sick bastards. Corporate prayer to kill the healthcare overhaul bill. Family Research Council President Tony Perkins will be joined by congressional leaders, prominent pastors, and policy experts to discuss and pray. Oh, my God. Life and death hinges on the Senate health care bill, says Tony Perkins. We face significant threats to the God-given right to human life through government funding of abortions. You see, that's been taken out. Health care, our health from rationing. There is no rationing. Our family finances from higher taxes, you miserable, cheap son of a bitch. And our general freedoms posed by the government plan to take over health care, which is not part of this at all. This is why I hate these Christians. They are lying bastards. Sometimes I honestly wish, I said this the other night, that their hell existed, because every one of these pricks would be thrown into the deepest pit. They lie, they steal, they cheat. And then Tony Perkins adds, there have been a number of critical hours in American history. Our nation has struggled mightily, and under God, always risen to the challenges before us. Tonight, we will face this moral crisis by taking action and obeying the biblical mandate to pray for our nation and its leaders. Is that not psychotic? Is that not clinically insane? It's a goddamn health insurance reform bill, you freak. Sam Brownback, Kansas. Jim DeMint, South Carolina. Randy Forbes, Virginia. Michelle Bachman, Minnesota. Are some of the members of the House and Senate. Tony Perkins, James Dobson, Shirley Dobson, and it goes on and on. Oh, my God. It's just unbelievable. Well, I'll tell you what. Coming back after this break, there was an anti-war rally outside the White House. Yeah, what is it, Lafayette Park across the street from the White House on last Saturday? Dennis Kucinich spoke. Chris Hedges spoke. Cynthia McKinney spoke. Ralph Nader spoke. Did you hear anything about it? Huh? I would say less than 1,000 people showed up, if I got the numbers right. It might have been less than 300. Did you see any media coverage? Now, of course, if they would have tried to, I don't know, burn things or vomit blood or whatever, I'm sure this filthy goddamn media would have been all over it with their filthy goddamn cameras, right? But because it was this rally consisted of people of conscience speaking out, against war, American corporate media, of course, that lusts after war. It wants war because, you know, it makes for good ratings and they can brand the war. CNN owns this part. Fox owns that part. MSNBC owns that part. ABC, CBS, and NBC all own their own parts. And it makes the correspondents and the anchors look really good when there's a war. So they can put on those dumbass little black helmets where they look like Michael Dukakis in that horrible photo when his head popped up out of a tank back in 1988. Remember that? Oh, my God. They love it, though. Media in this country, especially television, they do anything to promote a war. They come up with music for it and graphics and sound effects. Well, these guys weren't talking war. They were talking peace. Consequently, no coverage. You know what we're going to do when we come back after this break? We're going to play some Chris Hedges, some Dennis Kucinich, and some Cynthia McKinney. Because nobody else will. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Now, we're going to try to play this for you. I don't know. Is our equipment working tonight, Kathy? you never know on this program. We always play it so close to the bone where it concerns the cost of keeping everything running. We really do. Anyway, anti-war rally across the street from the White House last Saturday that nobody paid any attention to in media except to belittle it or ignore it. And there were some pretty powerful speakers there. We have three of them. We're going to play for you a couple of clips from each one. We're going to start out with Chris Hedges, whom you are familiar with. You've heard me quote him considerably on this program. So let's just kick back and listen to Chris Hedges from last Saturday.
Those who recognize the injustice of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as Iran, who can see that these wars are not only a violation of international law, but under post-Nuremberg laws are defined as criminal wars of aggression, yet continue to support a Democratic Party that supports these wars, have forfeited their rights as citizens. By allowing the status quo to go unchallenged, they become agents of injustice.
Yes.
To do nothing is to do something, and they practice a faux morality. They take refuge in the conception of themselves as moderates. They stand on what they insist is the middle ground without realizing that the middle ground has shifted under us. That the old paradigm of left and right, liberal and conservative, is meaningless in a world where, to quote Immanuel Kant, we live in a time of radical evil. Nothing has changed for Muslims in the Middle East under the Obama administration. The wars of occupation go on or have expanded. Israel continues to flout international law, gobbling up more Palestinian land and carrying out egregious war crimes in Gaza. Calcified, repressive regimes in countries such as Egypt and Saudi Arabia are feted in Washington as allies, and Muslim rage is stoked because we station tens of thousands of American troops on Muslim soil, occupy two Muslim nations, and do nothing to halt the illegal Israeli occupation of Palestine. The Muslim world fears correctly that we intend to dominate Middle East oil supplies and any Caspian Sea oil infrastructure, and it does not want our protestations of goodwill, but they want the elemental right of justice and freedom from foreign occupation, and we would react should the situation be reversed no differently. The brutal reality of expanding foreign occupation and the harsher and harsher forms of control are the real tinder of Islamic fundamentalism, insurgencies, and terrorism. We can try and blame the violence on the clash of civilizations. We can naively tell ourselves that we are envied for our freedoms. We can point to the Quran. But these are fantasies that divert us from facing the central dispute between us and the Muslim world, from facing responsibility for the virus of chaos and violence spreading throughout the Middle East. We can have peace if we shut down our network of military bases, stay the hand of Israel to create a Palestinian state and go home, or we can have long, costly, and ultimately futile regional war.
All right, that's Chris Hedges. That was the first clip. Now we have another minute 43. Chris Hedges again.
It is we who are guilty for sending these young men and women to wars that did not have to be fought. It is we who are guilty for turning away from the truth of war to wallow in a self-aggrandizing myth. Guilty because we create and decorate killers when they come home maimed and broken and discard them. We face a crisis. Our democratic institutions are being ruthlessly dismantled by the corporate state. We have embarked on a program of perpetual war, and we are paralyzed by fear. To resist, while there's still time, is not only the highest form of spirituality, but the highest form of patriotism. It is, if you care about what is worth protecting in this country, a moral imperative. As Immanuel Kant, moral autonomy is possible only through reflection, self-determination, and finally the courage not to cooperate. There are hundreds of thousands who have died in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the number would be dwarfed by a war with Iran. Not a lot is being asked of us. Compare our potential sacrifices with what is being inflicted on and demanded of those trapped in the cauldrons of violence in Iraq, Afghanistan, and soon perhaps Iran. Courage, as Aristotle wrote, is the highest of human virtues, because without it, we are unlikely to practice any other virtue. And once we find courage, the courage not to cooperate with these systems of power, we find freedom. Thank you.
The courage not to cooperate. You know, to pick one voice who listens to this program, one person listens to this program, Bob Alexander was talking about that for a long time. That's what flipped him out, where he stopped writing the Moments with Bob. Don't blame him. Dennis Kucinich.
It's a beautiful day here to claim the beautiful power of the people, to challenge our government when we feel that our government has gone in the wrong direction. These wars are corrupting the heart of our nation.
That's right.
They raise serious questions about the legitimacy of the two-party system.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
This coming week, Congress will fold unemployment compensation into a bill which will provide $130 billion to keep the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq going. The message is clear. We have money for war, but not for jobs. Money for war, but not for health care. Money for war, but not for education. Money for war, but not for housing. Money for war, but not for peace. Billions for bailouts, bonuses, and bombs. Where is our security? when 10 million people will lose their homes in the next year? Where is our security when there are 15 million Americans out of work? Where is our security when 47 million Americans go to bed every night hungry? Where is our security where 47 million Americans do not have health care? We are nation building in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, and some would have us nation build even in Iran. But we cannot nation build here at home, where bridges, water systems, sewer systems, and roads are falling apart.
Real. That's right.
We must rally across America to set aright our nation's priorities. We must rally, protest, march to exercise our civic capacity to bring about real change. Congress must take responsibility. I will soon introduce two bills invoking the War Powers Act, which will force votes on withdrawal from Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Okay, we have another clip of Dennis that we will play after the break. But Kucinich, like Bernie Sanders with the single-payer amendment, and Kucinich with a funding an amendment that defunds this these corporate wars. These are two people, Sanders and Kucinich, who continue to take the route of tilting completely at windmills, which is Quixote and which is Sancho Panza. Can't talk tonight. Kucinich's amendments, how many times has he introduced amendments to defund a war or stop a war? And how many times has he been laughed at? How many times have the media talked about Kucinich saying a long time ago that, yeah, he'd seen a UFO? So have I. If you haven't seen one, you probably never look at the sky anymore. UFO doesn't mean flying saucer. It means an unidentified flying object. But look how they, the media, look what they did to Kucinich. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. All right, back to the second sound clip from Dennis Kucinich. This is an anti-war rally outside, across the street from the White House last Saturday, where a whole lineup of progressive anti-war speakers attended and gave some pretty rousing speeches. But, of course, you and I didn't know anything about it. Well, we probably did, but America knew nothing about it. Here's the second part of Dennis Kucinich's speech.
The decision to go to war is not the president's alone to make. That the Constitution places on Congress, under Article 1, Section 8, the ultimate responsibility. And we must insist that Congress take the responsibility whenever the president does not. Congress must stop funding these wars. Congress must demand a withdrawal from the wars. Congress must pass legislation to put millions back to work. Congress must pass legislation to provide health care for all. Congress must restrain this administration's impulse to use armed force to achieve a false sense of security. We have a right to defend ourselves, to be sure. But we must not confuse defense with offense. This Thursday, our president mused about the inevitability of war, war's instrumentality in the pursuit of peace, and just wars. It is important for us to reflect on his words, because once we believe in the inevitability of war, war becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's right.
Once we are committed to war's instrumentality in the pursuit of peace, we begin the Orwellian journey to a semantic netherworld where war is peace, where momentum of war overwhelms hopes for peace. And once we wrap doctrines perpetuating war in the arms of justice, we can easily legitimate the wholesale slaughter of innocents. The war in Iraq was based on lies. That's wars right. in That's Afghanistan right. and Pakistan right. are based on flawed doctrines of counterinsurgency. War is often not just, sometimes just war. And our ability to rethink the terms of our existence, to explore the possibility of peace, peace without war, may well determine whether we end war or war ends us. So let us gather in town squares, in parks, in villages, in colleges, in labor halls, to demand that we reset the priorities of our nation. To demand that we rally America to build our nation anew at home. To demand that we restore our nation to peace and prosperity. They are indivisible. They together will lead us to a new era, and your efforts will be an important part of that. Thank you very much.
Dennis Kucinich, one of the speakers at the poorly attended and absolutely not covered anti-war rally, Lafayette Park across from the White House last Saturday. Having, as I'm sure you have, participated in all sorts of demonstrations over the past 40 years, impeach Nixon, stop the war, end nuclear weapons, nuclear freeze movement. It just goes on and on and on. Right? I can remember when my daughter Wendy was born in 1966. And we lived in Richmond, Virginia, and we used to take her in her baby buggy, pram, stroller, whatever it was, and go for a walk out Monument Avenue, where there are lots of little parks. Monuments are all dedicated to Southern generals who fought in the War of Northern Aggression, as it's referred to in Richmond, obviously. And, you know, standing there with a tank of helium and blowing up balloons that said, "Ban the bomb," and handing them out to other young couples who are walking through the park with their children. Ban the bomb. Which was a movement, I believe, that movement began in the UK. And was exported to the United States. But going all the way back to 66, what is that, 43 years ago. all those demonstrations, all those efforts from a righteous standpoint of trying to participate in movements that would bring justice. That's all. That's the only word you need is justice. Don't have to go any further than that. Just the word justice. To bring justice in all its in all the areas that are desperately devoid of justice in a capitalistic system. By definition, all of them are devoid of justice. By definition. And I thought by this time we would have established at least a beachhead. But no. Not to be. All right, when we come back, we're going to play Cynthia McKinney. I have one clip of Cynthia McKinney. And then I have an announcement to make that I think you're going to find intriguing. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Kevin Richards.
It's 7 past the hour. Hold on to your own time. You're tuned to the Malloy program. Last hour we played a couple of clips, first from Chris Hedges, second from Dennis Kucinich, who were speakers at an anti-war rally across the street from the White House last Saturday. Oh, you didn't hear about it? Oh, my goodness. It's my understanding that there are only, I've heard varying estimates, under 1,000, under 300 people, maybe under 100. Who showed up to listen to anti-war notables make a plea, one last or one more or whatever, a plea for sanity, all of which will go unheard. Nobody in the United States, except for you and I, know about these speeches, this rally. Okay, a few other people of the 37 who listened to this program. But it did occur. It did happen, even though television did not validate it. Oh, I don't know. Maybe CNN had a little clip somewhere. You know, it was on a Saturday, not much happening. See if we can squeeze it in between Fareed Zakaria and what's her name? Oh, it doesn't matter. All right, here's Cynthia McKinney. We have one clip of Cynthia McKinney speaking at this rally last Saturday.
Now, given all these problems, what do our leaders do? Bomb, maim, and kill people on the other side of the planet whose resources certain powerful people in this country want to steal and whose territory occupies the land necessary for global conquest. Instead of investigating war criminals in the Bush administration, President Obama has chosen to become one.
Yeah.
Our president is now complicit in torture, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and crimes against the peace. So what are we to do? We will not give up and we will not go away. We are not so demoralized that we can't.
Shout it out.
short to listen to Right Wing Radio, here's Mike Malloy.
There's something else completely out of context is what we're talking about tonight, but I want to share with you. You can find this at commondreams.org. Walter Troches, who is a gay activist in Honduras, has been assassinated. Now, to a lot of people, the next statement is, so what? Who is he? Don't know what the hell you're talking about. You probably don't, but I think this is worth mentioning. He was 25 years old. He was a well-known lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered LGBT activist in Honduras. He was an active member of the National Resistance Front. His sexuality was secondary to the fact that he was an active member of the National Resistance Front against the coup d'etat there. He was assassinated Monday night, shot dead by drive-by killers. This young man, who had already been arrested and beaten for his sexual orientation after participating in a march against the coup, had been very active recently in documenting and publicizing homophobic killings and crimes committed by the forces behind the coup, which is believed to have been the motive for his murder. He had been trailed for weeks before his murder by thugs believed to be members of the state security forces. In an open letter documenting this wave of political assassinations of Honduran queers that he'd written last month, entitled Increase in Hate Crimes and Homophobia Towards the LGBT as a Result of the Civic Religious Military Coup in Honduras. He had written, this young man had written that, quote, once again, we say it is not acceptable that in these past 4 months, during such a short period, 9 transsexual and gay friends were violently killed, 6 in San Pedro Sula, 3 in Tegucigalpa. End quote. At the end of this open letter, Troches declared that, quote, as a revolutionary, I will always defend my people, even if it takes my life, end quote. Sadly, that's what happened. So for anyone who's paying attention, and I realize none of us are paying attention to the situation in Honduras. This was a man who was a young man, very young, 25, member of the National Resistance Front against this military religious coup that occurred down there, also active in lesbian, gay, and transgendered rights. And he has been shot dead on the streets of on the streets in Honduras. Just wanted to include that in our list of atrocities for this week. Okay. By the way, Amnesty International has issued a statement calling for an investigation of the murder. And I think we all know bless Amnesty, but nothing will happen. Sheila is in Tempe, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Sheila.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I want to thank you very much again for my podcast, which I won several weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thrilled with it.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Anyway, I just had a couple of comments I wanted to make.
Okay.
You had asked me to call back after, you know, I refused to stand over there all night waiting for her, but I did go and talk to some of the people waiting in line.
For the book signing? Sarah,
yes.
Okay.
And here's what I found out. One is a man behind me was using his cell phone, and he was saying, I have 30 pictures of her. I hope she runs for president.
Wait, Sheila. He said he had 30 pictures?
Yeah, while he was waiting in line.
Or dirty pictures?
Well, he didn't say they were dirty.
Oh, he said 30.
That he had 30 pictures waiting. He was so excited. She didn't even pretend to get out of, the bus?
Right.
Out of a limousine. But anyway, I had a reason for bringing these people up. Another one, I heard one man say, there's a lot of right-wingers here. And so I thought maybe he was a left-winger. So I said, oh, are you a right-winger? And he said, yes. He said, are you? And I said, no.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say I was a left-winger. And then a woman turned behind and shook her fist in the air. I'm a right-winger, and I'm proud of it.
Ooh.
Now, these are the kind of people. Now, I remember back, you had a man call you last week where I remember last summer, you were saying for a while, let McCain win and all this. Mm-hmm. But the night Sarah Palin had been nominated, or, you know, McCain had introduced her earlier today, and you said you had changed your mind. And I'm just telling you, we can't, if people abandon Barack Obama now, we also need him in for two terms so he can nominate judges for the Supreme Court. Otherwise, if liberals abandon him, you're not going to find a liberal. You're right on that. You won't find somebody like Bernie Sanders. You won't find somebody like Dennis Kucinich. I mean, and listen, as far as Hillary goes, I think she would have even been more warlike because of the very fact she was a woman, she wouldn't have wanted to be perceived as weak. So what alternative do we have? If people don't vote, you're going to get Sarah Palin in there next time.
Well, I...
Or somebody like her, and then Congress is going to, you know, to say nothing about judges.
Okay, well, look, Sheila, I've had this discussion so many times my head hurts. I appreciate your point of view, I really do. That is the standard point of view held by people who are Democrats, that, you know, we have to go with these lousy bastards because if we don't, X, Y, or Z will happen, or probably all three. That's all well and good, and I hear you loud and clear, but as far as I'm concerned, I've just had enough. I can't play that game anymore. I really can't. If we get fascist judges appointed, then it's up to the people to remove them. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. And back to your phone calls. Arthur is in Cape Coral, Florida, listening on XM. Hey, Arthur.
Yes, how are you? Last time I talked to you, I was in Shanghai. Now I'm back in the States. But anyway, as I was telling my friends,
yeah,
watch Lieberman, because he's going to kill it, and it has to do with Israel. That's how I summed it up. When I heard you say that tonight, I said, damn, I guess I'm not an anti-Semite after all. Because, you know, I'm afraid to talk on the same level, because, you know, got friends who will say, oh, you're just anti-Semitic, Art. And I said, wait a minute, no, look, it has to do with Obama not playing ball with the Israelis on those settlements. You're putting a little too much pressure on those settlements on the West Bank. So anyway, I'm glad to see that you came out with a report that basically says what I was telling some of my friends all along, that he'll kill health care if it helps to weaken Obama.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and, you know, and I'm a guy that just finished 2 years ago taking care of a wife for 29 years on dialysis. So I know the torturous path that it takes to take care of someone in the system we have. Because I've been through that, and I'm still recovering from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate the insight, Arthur.
Yeah, there's not much I can say. Where do we go from here? I mean, I agree.
Where do we go from here? No place.
Exactly.
You know, we just continue try to make a living, try to get by, live our lives.
Yeah, not lose your home in the process after you turn 55, right?
Well, that too.
Because the insurance rates will go from $800 a month to $1,500 a month.
Right. Right.
And they're going to charge us for all this, by the way. This isn't over. I mean, just killing the health care reform is only the beginning of the rape and pillage we're going to see in the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, eventually, maybe the people who are being oppressed, the people who are being oppressed to the extent that a lot of people may start to feel they're oppressed in this country, eventually they will rise up and say, no more. You know, we're just not going to take it anymore. We're not even near that point yet, but
I don't know. I see attempt to reform after attempt to reform being thrown in the trash, whether it is the financial services industry, whether it is the banks, whether it is a health insurance industry, no matter what it is.
But
whether
don't they see that by not taking action on things of, you know, important things for the country that benefits the country and makes it competitive in a modern world? I mean, I've seen what's going on in China, and I've been to Europe, and I'm telling you, if these Neanderthals think that they can play around like this with the economy and with the social net, they're going to lose out in the long run. They're not going to be ahead of the game with anyone down the road.
Who's going to lose out?
The top 10, the top 1% of the folks here.
They'll never lose out. What do you mean, Arthur?
They lost their manufacturing base, and they think they're going to keep what they have in China. It's not going to work that way.
Well, I don't think. I don't know. Maybe you're involved here in deep thought. I only go as far as saying that the top 1 or 2% will never lose what they have. It's too.
If the national economy
doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. National economy, national shikonomy. We don't deal with national economy anymore.
I guess they can just go somewhere else. And
right. Well, the ultra wealthy. The real ruling class in this country, they don't deal with American manufacturing, American farms, American anything. It is globalized now. This is the wonder of globalization, that the ultra wealthy, the whole damn planet could collapse, I guess, financially. It wouldn't hurt them a bit. Hey, I got a boogie. Thanks. I appreciate what you had to say, Arthur. I wouldn't worry that, and I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but I'm just saying, I wouldn't worry about that top 1%. They are anchored, into enough, deviations where it concerns capital markets and capitalism. They will never, ever, ever, ever be broken. Never. Got an email here from, who's this from? Ken? This is interesting. You can file this however you want to. Mike, the Susan G. Komen Fund for the Cure was created by her sister Nancy Brinker. Susan got breast cancer and after much suffering died tragically. Then later Nancy also came down with breast cancer, but she survived. Nancy and Susan were raised Jewish in Peoria, Illinois. Nancy married twice and divorced twice, and the second husband was Norman Brinker, the multimillionaire founder of Bennigan's Steak and Ale. Bennigan's Steak and Ale and Chili's restaurant chains. Come on, Mike. With the money from her second husband, she was able to create the Susan G. Komen Fund for the Cure. She and her husband were big campaign contributors to George W. Bush. Nancy seems to have done a great deal of good work in the anti-cancer field. But since she is Jewish and since Hadassah Lieberman is an Orthodox Jew, that may be the simple reason for why Hadassah is working for her foundation. It might also be a reason why Brinker would be loath to fire her. Who knows, Ken? Well, okay, the tribal blood is thicker than water belief, I guess, kicks in there. I just find it stunningly astonishing that an organization, Susan Komen Foundation, you know, working to, I guess, the Susan G. Komen for the Cure Foundation works to defeat breast cancer or cancer, period. Why it would continue to have Hadassah Lieberman, whether she's Jewish, Catholic, or atheist, you know, or someone that believes in reincarnation. What difference? I'm not challenging Ken's email. I understand what he's saying, but in the larger picture, what difference should it make if the husband of this woman that you are paying is doing everything he can to destroy a public option that would assist more women in dealing with this scourge of breast cancer? That's the part that is so incredible to me. But what do I know? Steve is in Austin, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Kenneth kind of beat me to the point. He came at the same conclusion somewhat from a different point of view.
Uh-huh.
Consider this. CARE, isn't that the Israeli PAC?
CARE?
Support Lieberman. And
wait, CARE.
I don't mean CARE. I mean the Israeli lobby.
AIPAC?
AIPAC, there you go.
Okay.
Okay. That's Lieberman's professional meal ticket. Hadassah is the personal meal ticket. And you've kind of tied it up in a nice little package that is fairly simple to comprehend. And Ken nailed it, sort of, I think. Don't forget that the Jewish bloodline, doesn't it continue through the maternal side?
Who's the
real Zionist in the family?
Well, I get what you're saying, but the only thing is, I'm just worried that we're getting a little bit far afield here. Ken's email may be solidly grounded. Maybe Ken's Jewish. I have no idea. The only reason this issue of religion came up tonight was because I found what Robert Perry wrote at Consortium News, not only understandable, but very possible / probable that the larger effort here, it's so weird sometimes to talk about this particular issue because everybody gets their bloomers in a wad as soon as you start talking about it. This is one of the unmentionable. You're not supposed to talk about this. Come on. But, you know, the person who did the most damage to the U.S. security agencies, which might be a good thing in the long run, what was his name? Pollard, who was spying for the Israelis. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. I guess when you have gone through what the Jews have gone through for, 3,000-4,000 years, you do become, if not paranoid, extremely watchful to the point where when you have a country like the United States with the power to blow anybody off the planet, you want to make damn good and sure you know what that big country is going to do, hence all the spying. The Soviet Union, I guess, the old Soviet Union the same way. You know, I don't know. I just find Perry's explanation reasonable that what is going on here with Lieberman, because the explanation or the thought that Lieberman is doing this because he's working for the insurance industry, the health insurance industry, doesn't make sense when you take a look at the bill, when you take a look at what is actually in the bill. It wouldn't hurt the insurance industry at all, the health insurance industry at all. So, you know, you're left with something. What's the reason? Perry, who is a lot smarter about geopolitical intrigues than most of us will ever be, just comes up with a simple explanation. And don't forget Occam's razor. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. By the way, just for the sake of argument, it really doesn't matter anymore. But the Center for Tax Justice did some calculations, And the tax legislation enacted under George W. Bush from 2001 through 2006 will cost this economy, or will reduce the amount of tax revenue collected by the government by $2.5 trillion over the 2001 to 2010 period. This includes the revenue loss of $2.1 trillion that results directly from the Bush tax cuts, as well as the almost $400 billion in additional interest payments on the national debt that we have to make since the tax cuts were deficit financed. Okay? $2.5 trillion. That's what George Bush spent of our money. Over the upcoming decade, 2010 to 2019, the cost of the health care proposals approved by three committees in the U.S. House are projected to be around $1 trillion. $2.5 trillion in tax cuts. And who did the tax cuts benefit? All the liberals and all the progressives and all the Democrats kept screaming it's only going to benefit the already wealthy, which is exactly what it did. To the tune of $2.5 trillion of real wealth that accrued to the ultra wealthy, and real debt that accrued to you and me and people like us. On the other hand, as flawed as these plans were, the Health Insurance Reform Act, or bills that were passed by three congressional House committees, would have cost $1 trillion. So go figure. And under the House bills, roughly half of that $1 trillion would be offset with savings in our existing health care programs. And the other half would be offset with a surcharge on the incomes of the extremely wealthy, the ones who glommed up the $2.5 trillion. But this is why there really isn't, until the system is utterly replaced with one that is involved in justice, economic justice. Until that happens, there's not going to be just like Bernie Sanders says, I'll go ahead and introduce this amendment, but it's not going to go anywhere. The Congress of the United States, the House and the Senate, are both wholly owned subsidiaries of corporate America. And until, if ever, we get them back, it's going to remain that way. And you and I and millions of people like us, if we choose not to take to the streets, which we probably will not, then the second choice is to adapt. You know, it's the old Darwinian thing, adapt or die. So I think that's what it's come down to. Damn, I'm stumbling around tonight. I'm sorry. It's come down to that, adapt or die. The other choice is to change it, you know, to change it all. But I don't know. The really fiery rhetoric doesn't come from, with a few exceptions, doesn't come from the young people who are capable of those kinds of revolutionary acts. But the fiery rhetoric comes from people who have already been there, done that, and it would be very difficult for them to, wind up their pacemakers and grab their crutches and wheelchairs and go out and overthrow the government. That's just not, I don't think that's going to happen. I really don't. You know, it almost happened 40 years ago, but those people 40 years ago were 30. How old are they now? Right. So. Doug is in L.A. listening on Sirius. Hey, Doug. Where's Doug? Well, he's not there. We'll try again in a second. Maybe Doug's over here. Is that you, Doug? Well, no, that's not Doug there either. We had two Dougs up there in Los Angeles listening on Sirius. That's interesting. James is in Cave Junction, Oregon.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, James.
Oh, boy. Where to start? See, okay, Obama, if you're ready to put on your tinfoil hat.
Sure.
Okay, Obama, the Republicans ran McCain and Palin as a weak candidate right off the get-go, so they have somebody as a scapegoat for a full right-wing takeover in 2012. And until we get up in arms and finally reboot this country, you know, it's just going to be more of the same.
Well, what do you suggest when you say reboot the country? What would you do?
Reboot the country. Insurrection.
Well, but people are not going to do that. You know, one of the reasons, one of the primary reasons for destroying the middle class in this country is to ensure that there is no insurrection. That's where revolution or insurrection always comes from. It doesn't come from poor people. It doesn't come from people who are beat into the ground. It comes from the middle class. Always has. I don't care who you look at. Look at Mao. Look at Che Guevara. Look at, you know, just pick your revolutionary. Look at Marx. Look at Lenin. Now, these are not poor people. These were intellectuals or professionals. They were doctors. They were writers. They were thinkers. Hold on a second. Let me put you on hold, James, and we'll pick it up when we come back after this break. This is the Mike Malloy Program. Stick around.
Country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, cause
about 7 past the hour. It's the Malloy Show. If you're keeping track. Michael Simpson, do you know yesterday something very significant occurred? The United States Supreme Court refused to review a lower court's dismissal of a case brought by 4 British former detainees against Donald Rumsfeld and other senior military officers for ordering torture and religious abuse at Guantanamo. The lower court had dismissed the case. 4 of our former torturees brought this case. They were the 4 people, British, spent more than 2 years in Guantanamo. They were repatriated to the UK 5 years ago. The Obama administration had asked the court not to hear the case. The Obama administration had asked the court not to hear the case. Now, again, this was a civil case. I don't think this is the John Yoo case. I think this is a different one. The John Yoo case was, Padilla. Was it Jose Padilla? I know it looks like it should be pronounced Padilla, but I've been told that in this case it's Padilla. Anyway, the Obama administration had asked the court not to hear this case by 4 British citizens, glommed up, sent to Guantanamo, tortured, and apparently their religion was abused at Guantanamo. But the Obama administration said, no, don't hear it. Now, by refusing to hear the case, and the U.S. Supreme Court agreed, I guess, by refusing to hear the case, the U.S. Supreme Court let stand this earlier opinion by the D.C. Circuit Court, which found that something called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, a statute that applies by its terms to all persons. That this statute does not apply to detainees at Guantanamo, which effectively rules that the detainees are not persons at all for the purpose of U.S. law. Now, the lower court, the D.C. Circuit Court, had also dismissed the detainees' claims under the Alien Tort Statute and the Geneva Conventions, finding that the defendants were immune. Donald Rumsfeld and the military officers, they were immune on the basis that, quote, torture is a foreseeable consequence of the military's detention of suspected enemy combatants, end quote. Do you understand that? Rumsfeld and the people being sued are immune, according to the D.C. Circuit Court. These war criminals are immune on the basis that torture is expected when the military, our military, detains suspects. People suspected of being enemy combatants. The term enemy combatant is a made-up term. There is no such thing that I'm aware of in U.S. law, in international law. Remember when this came up 6-7 years ago, when the Bush crime family said, well, you know, they're not entitled to any rights under any jurisdiction because they're not, you know, they're not soldiers. They're enemy combatants. They're not civilians. They're enemy combatants. Now the U.S. Supreme Court has, by not ruling, but not even hearing the case by the D.C. lower court, has effectively declared, and this will be used, that detainees, A, are not really persons. They are non-persons. Where have you heard that before? A non-person. They're non-persons, and that torture is a foreseeable consequence. It is to be expected, not assumed, but expected, when the military detains people suspected of being an enemy combatant, of being a made-up term. It is expected of people who are suspected. Torture. Son of a bitch. And then finally, the circuit court, the one that the U.S. Supreme Court refused to review, the circuit court found that even if torture and religious abuse were illegal, even if it were, the defendants, Donald Rumsfeld and his gang, were immune under the Constitution because they could not have reasonably known that detainees at Guantanamo had any constitutional rights. Oh, my God. So between the D.C. Circuit Court and the United States Supreme Court with its inaction, the D.C. Court with its action, and the Obama administration, we now have a class of non-being. It may walk and think and sing and cry and pray and fart like a human being, but it's not a human being. What are you going to believe? The D.C. Circuit Court or your lying goddamn eyes? What are you going to believe? We now have declared in this country that certain people who were classified as an enemy combatant, a term that exists nowhere, now we've declared that enemy combatants are not even persons. U.S. corporations have the same rights as persons, but people that we scoop up in Afghanistan or Iran or the high seas or Iraq or Syria or wherever we scoop them up, they have no rights. U.S. corporations have rights through the looking glass. Are you kidding me? This is where we are. So for the people who I put myself among them, who have been plaintively, crying out about the unfairness of it all, forget about it, all right? Adapt Or revolt. I don't know. Adapt or die. Revolt or suffocate. I don't know. I don't know. It's again, I don't think there has ever been in the history, certainly not the recent history, say 70, 80 years of this country, a clearer choice. Adapt or revolt. I mean, is there a third one? Just conduct business as usual? Well, in doing that, aren't we adapting? When our courts have the power to declare human beings to be non-persons, who wrote about non-persons? Was that in the Gulag Archipelago? Was that Solzhenitsyn? Who was it? Was it? I guess a lot of Soviet writers who were out of the country, who are not going to be captured and put into a gulag. I guess that isn't that the term? A Soviet non-person? Is that where that comes from? A non-person? I just find that one a little bit difficult to handle. Woo! My goodness. Oh, by the way, the four former detainees, the ones who sued, were held for 3 years at Guantanamo before being sent home to England without being charged with anything. You understand? No charges were ever filed. They were kidnapped, detained, tortured, and then sent home. They filed their case 5 years ago seeking damages from Rumsfeld and senior American military officers for violations of their rights. Never charged with anything. Never charged with a thing. But the court has ruled, the D.C. court ruled, that even if torture were illegal, defendants are immune. Rumsfeld's immune because they could not have reasonably known that detainees had any constitutional rights. A, B, the foreseeable consequences of military detention is torture.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, our military affairs correspondent Sharon points out the obvious. Given the Supreme Court ruling, what can we expect then when our soldiers or even our civilians are captured and labeled enemy combatant by a Taliban or Al-Qaeda? Or some other group. I guess they couldn't be labeled enemy combatants because our people are always dressed in uniform. Oh, wait a second. That's right. No, they're not. So what happens? What happens when one or two or ten of our people, and we don't know, maybe that's already happened. Our right-wing media, of course, would never let word get out. No, they wouldn't. You might say, of course they would, Mike, to whip up frenzy against the people kidnapped. No, I disagree. This is just something we would not know. So what happens, though, whether we know or don't know, to Americans who are captured and the same rules are applied as have been applied by action of the U.S. District Court in Washington and inaction by the U.S. Supreme Court that would declare our people to be non-persons? And not subject to anything, anywhere, about anything. Now, of course, Al-Qaeda doesn't have constitutional law like we do. Of course not. But wouldn't we be screaming bloody murder? I think we would. I really do. Andre writes in about Unperson from Wikipedia in the George Orwell book 1984. An Unperson is someone who has been vaporized. Vaporization is when a person is murdered by being turned into vapors. Not only has an Unperson been killed, they have also been erased from society, the present, the universe, and existence. Such a person would be taken out of books, photographs, and articles so that no trace of them is found in the present anywhere. No record of them would be found. Nothing. The point of this was that such a person would be gone from all citizens' memories, even friends and family. There is no newspeak word for what happened to unpeople. Therefore, it is thought crime to say an unperson's name or think of unpeople. This is like the Stalinist Soviet Party erasing people from photographs after death. This is an example of real unpeople. Jesus, God. It's getting curiouser and curiouser, I swear to God. Yeah, so I should have recognized Unperson from 1984, but that doesn't come from the novel, I don't think. That was, I think, what Wikipedia and Andre are quoting there is a glossary of terms that came with as an appendum appendium. Jesus, I can't think of the word to 1984, a second book. That, not quite a book, but laid out the philosophy of Big Brother and the terminology, how the language was developed, why it was developed, and the way it was developed. It gets into the theories of Big Brotherdom, into the dialectic. Where are we? Right here. James is in Cave Junction, Oregon. Hey, James.
Hey, Mike, back to what we were saying about revolution, we were inches away from a socialist revolution armed in during the last Great Depression. And then after that, when things settled down, what did the right wing do? They, McCarthy and them, went after the socialists, calling them communists, and ruined their lives. When a man can't feed his children anymore, a man gets angry. And a man gets angry, he does things. And just like, the French, starvation is, if you're not used to starvation, is a cause of revolution.
What is a cause?
Starvation.
Yes, but it's a cause for people perhaps to join a resistance movement. But the leadership of a revolution, the people who actually put it together, give it life, breathe life into it, are not people whose children are starving. Because there is, I'm not trying to be cute here, but there is no time to think revolution when your children are starving. If you are a rational human being, you are doing everything in your power to find food for your children. The so-called Okies during the Dust Bowl days were a classic example of that. These were people who were literally starving to death. And they were trying to find, you read Grapes of Wrath, I'm sure. They were trying to find a place to live. They were, if you remember how that movie was put together, they were depicted pretty much the way Steinbeck had them in the book. They were very malleable. You could do anything with them. You could knock them around. You could deny them their money. You could kick them in the ass, and they didn't respond. No, I understand what you're saying. The frustration can build to the point where somebody can get murderous. Somebody can, run into the street with a loaded gun and start firing because everything is collapsing in their universe. Somebody can walk into a bank or a department store and demand money and start shooting. People can go nuts, but real revolution always is led, unless somebody wants to challenge that statement, I'm open to it. But as far as I've read history, it's always, always led by people who are from the middle class. That's one of the reasons that our slaughter of the middle class in Iraq was so horrible. We didn't need to invade. All we had to do is support a middle class until people finally said they had enough of the dictator. That's true anywhere, isn't it? Oh, my. Thanks, James. We'll be right back. Troubles on us, and God. We will not pray. Not today, I sing. This is your day. Our
This is a special.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
With Mike Malloy, indeed. All right, back to your phone calls here in just a second. It's 25 before the hour. Michael in Roswell writes, regarding the Democrats and Republicans, we are never going to be without the defenders of rapacious capitalism or the partisan apologists for corruption. We don't have choices about those things or about the pervasiveness of their views in popular media. We don't even have much say in who ends up running for office. The state and national party machines are much more influential than we're willing to admit in this regard. The circumstances that led to Lieberman still being in the Senate, for example, provide some justification for that view. The only way to marginalize the people the system promotes is to stop giving them money and votes, even if it means we spend another two or three decades living with the result of that, while building a national organization which can drive out the moral and ethical corruption that is pervasive in government today. The difference between the two dominant party machines today are ones of relatively small degree, not kind, but degree. So continuing support for one or the other will not improve the situation in that time period. Things might get worse in the short term, but logic prescribes that the best way to solve a problem is to understand the root problem and solve it, rather than to continue to treat symptoms as causes. The root problem is the misperception that one of the two dominant parties is preferable to the other, when in fact both parties continue to promote and benefit from a vastly corrupted system. Well, that makes sense. Thank you, Michael. Yeah, that's more or less the Ralph Nader point of view. It is the point of view, I think, that one comes to when one says, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to participate in a system that is so corrupt any longer. Even if it does mean that refusal to participate will ride all sorts of night riders and highwaymen who will swing the country even further to the right. And yes, like one caller said tonight, it means, uh-oh, right-wing Supreme Court justices. Well, what do we have now? I mean, come on. Can it get much worse? Probably, possibly, maybe. Okay, certainly. But if the goal is long term, if the goal really, and this is a goal that will not include me, but if the goal is really over the next 30 or 40 years to institute justice in this country, which we've only taken swipes at. Come on, you know that as well as I do. Economic justice, social justice, whatever modifier you want to put with it. We all know or should know at this point that justice in this system, this society, is two or three tiered. And those of us who are on the lower middle tier, okay, maybe more than two or three, maybe it's like six tiered. Those of us who are on the lower middle tier occasionally get justice if we happen to get a sympathetic hearing. I'm not talking about in the courtroom, you know what I'm talking about. But the vast majority of people in this country do not get justice ever, whether it's about their jobs or their education or control of their lives or whether or not they get health care or an examination or a trip to the doctor or the dentist. You know, whatever, however you define justice, I define it as an equal application of opportunity as well as the law. I mean, that's all. That's all just those things that I thought were guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution or the Declaration of Independence or
the Federalist Papers or somewhere back there. You know, there's got to be something in there that's. So the plan is, as Michael rightly points out, and I think most people who are not interested in the delusion of next month's profits, the plan is long term. And when you take a look at the length of time and stack it up against somebody's life, it's probably half a lifetime. Now, whether or not that dedication in large enough numbers of people to change the system will actually appear is that's the open question, right? And like I say, a lot of us who are talking the talk will not be able to walk the walk for a very simple reason. We won't be here. It's outside our temporal boundaries, I guess the way to put that one. Doug is in L.A. listening on Sirius. Hi, Doug.
Mr. Malloy, my friend.
Hey, what's up?
To everybody I know, I call you the truth.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my poor brother's delivering food. He got the Kings game right now. He's dying. He's like, I hate this every time.
I know. That's just the way it goes with KTLK. There's nothing we can do about it.
They go above and beyond. It's serious, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I called to talk about Obama.
Yeah.
And the problem is, like, such painful things happen every day that we put our faith in these politicians, like, it's going to be okay, let's just do our thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never the case. The two-headed dragon always been. And, I mean, since you denounced it, honestly, I denounced it. That's my thing. I mean, like, the Democrat, I don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't call it. And it's like the faith has been lost. And, I mean, compassion for one another is, like, it's not even here anymore.
Right.
You know, it just bothers me. I'm in Los Angeles, so it's like a whole new traditionalism of 400 years ago is right here now, and it's a whole different thing. So it's like borders, whatever it is, it's still America. I mean, I'm a good American such as yourself, and I want to preach the good, and like what would happen to Thomas Jefferson's, and I mean, I'm not talking about rapists and racists and stuff like that, but what happened to the good American? You know what I mean? Like the Hunter Thompsons, maybe.
Yeah, right. Here you go.
Too crazy? You know, I don't want to die at 60. I'm not getting greedy, but you know what I mean, brother?
I do know what you mean. I do know what you mean.
Honestly, people don't even put on blinkers when they turn. To me, that's like a fuck you to humanity.
Oh my God. No, you can't do that. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're listening on Sirius, but we're also going over the air, you know, so I know you know that. I know. I had to cut you off.
Thank you, Bob Kincaid. Just say that.
Oh, thank you, Bob Kincaid. Thank you, Head on Radio Network, for providing us with that piece of equipment that we never could have afforded on our own. Never! Anyway, I get what you're saying, and what you're saying is absolute truth, and I appreciate you saying it. And your language doesn't offend me. It's just that, you know, I've got certain rules and regs I have to go by. All I need is one FCC complaint. And one of those, what is it now? $350,000 fines. Woo! Oh, they would never get me because I'm not, you know, I mean, we have a corporation that protects us, but that would certainly put us out of business. So all the little right-wing jacklegs right now writing that down. Oh, Malloy, oh, that's how we get him off the air. Oh, good, let's file an FCC complaint. He said the F word. Oh, bite me. Anyway, to our caller, now I hear what you're saying, and I'm in total agreement. Just be cool. Be cool with the language. Mike is in Chicago. My man, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Uh-oh, someone needs an audio Band-Aid, it looks like.
Yeah, see, you guys...
didn't offend me, too. I get as riled up also.
Right. You guys listening online, you could hear everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and it definitely got my attention, but yeah. In a pleasant kind of way.
Right, absolutely, absolutely.
You know what? One thing no one's talking about, though, is I think for any of the future things now for next year, so many Democrats are going to lose their seats.
Yes.
We can say goodbye to the defense of marriage, the don't ask, don't tell. And if Obama would have taken care of these early on, it would, at least he would have those in his resume.
Well,
but now all he's got is a losing health bill, and he would sign a napkin at this point just so he could say, I'm the first president in 50 years to have any kind of reform.
Right. But this is where guys like you and I kind of didn't get the original point, and that was that Obama, you're from Chicago, you know Chicago politics, you know Obama is not a liberal.
I tried to get him into office. I was out in the streets.
I know. but you also know, or you should have known, as I should have known. Well, we did know that Obama was not your traditional liberal. Or your traditional progressive. Come on, he comes from a strata of society in this country. I mean, come on, Mike. I don't know where you went to school, but I'll bet it wasn't Yale or Harvard.
No. But you know, the one thing that I don't get, and if you YouTube, Chris Rock introduces Obama. He does a 5-minute spiel, and then Obama. The thing that he says, I'm running for president because I'm sick of reading about a Justice Department that doesn't enforce justice.
Yeah, and, yeah.
You know, I'm running for president because I'm sick of Democrats being Republican light.
Hey, hold on this a second. Hold on, Mike. Hold on. We got to do a break. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. The sale from Saturn is here. The best deals ever on Saturn with $4,000 total cash back on every new vehicle. Or qualified buyers can choose 0% financing on all models. Length of contract is limited. Take delivery by January 4th. Hurry to your Saturn retailer tomorrow. It's about 10 before the hour. Back to Mike in Chicago. Now, what were you saying? I lost it.
As far as if you go on YouTube and you just type in Chris Rock introduces Obama.
Oh, yeah, right.
He does about a 2-minute little shtick, and then Obama comes out. And one of the first things he says is, I'm running for president because I'm sick of reading about a Justice Department that
right.
doesn't believe in justice.
Right.
And, you know, I listen to everything he says, and, you know, other than Stephanie and Tom Hartman, I can't listen to the radio anymore.
I
listen to audiobooks, and I've been listening to John Dean's Broken Government.
Uh-huh.
And it angers me to a level I can't even put into words of all the things that Cheney and Bush have done. And I was never even aware of.
Mm.
And I say to myself, you know, why isn't he legal counsel with Jonathan Turley? You know, I don't understand this.
Right.
And no one has the answers. And the Democrats and even the Democratic Party, the people aren't in the streets with pitchforks and torches. I don't know. Everyone's just so complacent. It just, you know, it angers me.
Well, is it complacency or is it just, is it doubt, confusion, anxiety, fear? I don't know. I rail all the time about the ignorance in this country, and which I think is there. But complacency, I don't know, Mike. I would like to pick up the pitchfork, the metaphorical pitchfork, and take to the streets tomorrow morning, but I won't. And I don't think it's because I'm complacent. I don't know what the answer is any longer. The answer may rest in all this technology that we have. We do have the internets. We do have the World Wide Web. We do have an organizational power that, you know, the people that landed on the moon didn't have. And I've got it on my PC. I've got it on my laptop. I've got it. So do you.
Just the equipment that we have here in this little dinky studio far exceeds what NASA had back in 1969. So,
oh yeah,
that,
I know. It's just, you know what I think it is also is I think that people just figure, oh, this will all, it'll work itself out because nothing can be as bad as the last administration. So it's kind of like if you're starving, the cracker is the best cracker you've ever had in your life. And
yeah.
That's what it is we've been so badly beaten constitutionally for the last 8 years that finally any resemblance of law abiding, it's the best thing in the world.
Even if it isn't really law abiding, but somebody sent me an email and said after breathing methane for 8 years, it's nice to have at least a whiff of oxygen.
Right.
And Obama, if anything, provides a whiff of oxygen. He may be ultimately as destructive by his inactivity as the Bush crime family was destructed by their activity. But at least for a moment, you take a deep breath when you see Obama walk out on the stage and you say, damn, I can breathe again.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to believe that one day he is going to do something, but I'm just afraid that by the time he gets around to doing it, we're going to lose so many seats in the Congress that we're not going to be able to get anything passed. If we can't do it now, like the saying goes, when will we? We'll never get another chance at presidency.
Right. Well, the real I hate this metaphor, but the real bull in the China shop is global climate change. There's all kinds of stuff happening in Copenhagen that we've not been covering. I'm going to try to devote some time to it tomorrow. Media are not covering it, except to present it as a slugfest between the United States and China, or the haves and the have-not nations, the rich nations and the not-rich nations. But this attempt in Copenhagen, it should be getting the attention that the nuclear freeze movement got. And it is not. Of course, it took the nuclear freeze movement a couple of decades to get the kind of serious attention that it should have gotten from the very beginning. But all this stuff that we talk about, Mike, it may just be completely moot if no attention, at least effective attention, and solutions are found, and they're there to reverse or at least ameliorate. Or at least bring to a pause this global climate change. We're ignoring some stuff that is just astonishing. I mean, all you have to do is just spend some night watching a program on Nova or the Discovery Channel.
As long as Tiger Woods isn't on it.
Yeah, right. But if you look at these documentaries put together about what I'm laughing because it's the laugh that's gallows humor. It's like that old song that Kathy used to play. We're all gonna die. We all know, well, I guess we all know we're all going to die, but nobody thought they would die because of global climate change. I don't think anybody in my generation ever had a clue that there even was such an issue as global climate change. It only started to get into the popular discussion when in the late 60s, early 70s, and even then it was just kind of like, hey, the planet's warming up. Really? Okay, let's smoke some reefer.
Also, I think it's because the dumbing down of society in the 60s and 70s, there were sleep-ins and everything else, and now the kids watching MTV and VH1 and they have no idea anything about politics.
Well, I know, and maybe that's the survival instinct. Hey, I gotta go, Mike.
Okay, Mike, take care. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah, I don't, and thanks for not saying the F-bomb. And again, Bob Kincaid knows what I'm talking about. Thanks for that piece of equipment, Bob, that delay thing that that we use here and have been using since we went solo. Stick around for Bob Kincaid's Head on Radio Network program, a rebroadcast of which comes up following this on the White Rose Society stream. You ain't heard nothing unless you've heard the Bob Kincaid program. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seeker, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
of all the things